you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle, and coming up on Fresh Air, guest host Arun Venugopal talks with the author of A Little Devil in America. Critics are calling Luminous, the book Luminous. It looks at how black artists have shaped and been shaped by American culture. That's coming up in fewer than 20 minutes, Fresh Air, right here on KPCC. Next, we turn our attention to a fascinating study looking at the ability to implant false memories and to be able to actually manage what memories someone has. I think most of us have the experience of seeing the malleability of memory just because of events earlier in our lives when other people were there and we have totally different memories about how those events unfolded. I know for myself, I consider many of my memories highly fallible, and the details likely were filled in by my brain where maybe those details were different as the actual event unfolded. We're going to try and get at the reasons why that is. Joining us is Hartmut Blanc, who is co-author of this new study, Rich False Memories of Autobiographical Events Can Be Reversed. He's in the psychology department at the University of Portsmouth in southern England. He has the title of reader, which is similar to associate professor here in the States. Thank you very much, Hartmut, for being with us. Describe briefly for us how you set up this this study to be able to reverse false memories.
Yeah, maybe I should tell a little bit about the backstory first. So,
sure, briefly.
I mean,
yeah.
The issue of false memories is something that has been on the memory research agenda for the last, let's say, almost 50 years. So, mainly pioneered by the work of Professor Elizabeth Loftus, and so it started kind of with little things, as you mentioned earlier. So, you know, some details of what you think you might remember aren't quite what it seems. So you may have witnessed, for instance, a car accident and the car involved was a Volvo. And then you talk to a co-witness and that co-witness tells you it's a BMW. And at a later point in time, when you're questioned by the police, for instance, you might report it was a BMW. And these false memories that we investigated took, that has been taken a step further in the 1990s by demonstrating that you cannot only change little details of memories, you can implant whole new autobiographical memories of maybe something that happened in your childhood, that you got lost in a mall or something. And so that is the backstory to where we started. So we did something similar that has also been done in other research. And typically what you do is you come up with plausible events that might have happened to you as a child. And we did actually contact the parents of our student participants and ask them to come up with such plausible events that might have happened. And then you start interviewing them about these events. And what happens is that over the course of repeated interviews, some participants, not all of them, not in all cases, but typically around 30-40%, start to develop false memories of these kind of suggested events. So that's what we did as well, and we produced similar rates of false memories. But then our major focus in the study was actually about trying to undo these false memories. And we tried to do that using two techniques that were designed to, in a way, empower participants and make them more likely to go back to their own experience. And those two techniques, one of them we called source sensitization. So that is basically to alert them to possible sources where their memories might come from. So for instance, pointing out that some of the things we think we remember is actually just family stories, and somehow we over time have made them our own. And the other one is false memory sensitization. That's the idea. So to alert them to the possibility that by in these interviews, trying very hard to retrieve something, you in a way make it happen yourself. You start believing in those memories that you desperately try to retrieve, but that aren't actually true memories. And so just by pointing out these possibilities and in a way kind of broaden their approach to remembering these events. So we managed to get that false memory rate back down again to where it was at the beginning.
We're talking with Hartmut Blank, who is co-author of the study Rich False Memories of Autobiographical Events Can Be Reversed. He's at the University of Portsmouth in southern England. Also with us, the aforementioned pioneer in this area of research, distinguished professor of psychological and cognitive science at UC Irvine, Elizabeth Loftus, who's been with us a number of times over the years on Air Talk. Professor Loftus, welcome back. Very good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure.
Well, what is the significance for you of seeing this research, which you were not involved with, but your thoughts on its findings?
Well, first of all, I think that Professor Blank's description of this was just perfect. I wish I had a tape recording of it so I could just play it to my students in my classes, and then they could get, you know, a nice, wonderful summary of this very fine piece of work. You know, I think what he and his collaborators have done is, first of all, they have succeeded in planting the false memories for things that would have been pretty upsetting if they had actually happened, things like getting in an accident or having an injury or getting lost, something that would have been at least mildly or moderately or even, you know, vastly traumatic had it actually happened. But the real innovation here is the techniques to try to get people to be more skeptical and to scrutinize the source of their memories and to think about the false memory problem. And what these techniques did is pretty dramatically reduce the percentage of people who then still claimed this this false event as their memory.
We'll continue with Professor Elizabeth Loftus, UC Irvine, where she teaches criminology, law, and society. She's distinguished professor of psychological and cognitive science, but very well known for her high-profile appearances in court cases, also the research that she's done on false memory. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Coincidentally, Professor Loftus just profiled in The New Yorker. We'll be back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. We're talking about the unreliability of memory and how to deal with that. What we're also learning about how our brain functions when it comes to memory. We're joined by researcher Hartmut Blank, Professor Blank of the University of Portsmouth in southern England, and from right here in Southern California, UCI's distinguished professor of psychological and cognitive science, Elizabeth Loftus. I just mentioned that New Yorker profile, and Professor, it dives into all the criticism you got for testifying Harvey Weinstein's defense in his criminal trial about how people's memories can be unreliable when it comes to even traumatic events. Just first of all, you know, are you still facing a tremendous amount of criticism for being willing to come in on the defense side?
Oh, well, that was, you know, that was quite the experience, Larry. I mean, you know, I gave some very general testimony about, you know, what we know about the malleability of memory, the kinds of studies that have been done, the ones that provide the foundation for the study that you're featuring, you know, on the show today. And it was very general testimony, but it did irk some people that I would even, you know, step in as an expert witness, even in that very general way. You know, my reaction is, you know, hey, this is we live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty, and even unpopular people deserve to have a defense, and I think that has to be kept in mind.
That was quite euphemistic when you said people were irked, but that would be one way of putting it. So looking at this from the criminal justice perspective, and I understand there's just, you know, we're just scratching the surface on our understanding of memory. How do we find ways then to rely on eyewitness accounts, people who are, you know, identifying a suspect in a criminal case, are recounting something that was told to them by another person, recounting their specific memory? How can a jury weigh that given what we understand of memory at this point?
What the jury has to do is of course, listen to the testimony and then arrive at some decision. What I and other psychologists have been worried about is that many lay people and jurors in particular do have misconceptions about the workings of memory. And so one of the roles of an expert witness or a consultant in a legal case is to help educate the jury so that they can arrive at their own decision about whether to accept the memory or whether to decide that it might be a function of some other process and not an actual memory. But at least they should be deciding that based on a good understanding of the science, not on intuition that is contradicted by scientific findings, like the kinds of findings we're talking about here today.
Jim in Hollywood asks a tremendous question. How do false memory implantation, how does that work in a group setting? You might have a cult of some kind or, you know, how does it work in that way?
Did you want me to answer?
Yes, please, Professor. I'm sorry.
Yes,
Professor Loftus.
Well, when people get suggestive information, when they get misinformation, from external sources that gets communicated to them, you know, in a variety of ways in the real world, it can alter the memories of people who are receiving that information. And of course, this is one of the big problems that we're having, you know, with the pandemic, because there's so much misinformation and disinformation being circulated through a variety of sources that can have serious consequences for someone's happiness and health.
And what are the ways, if you have someone, though, who is in some sort of, you know, conspiracy theorist group or cult setting where it's groupthink and you know, no dissension is tolerated, and essentially, you know, it's not fact-based, but there's all sorts of false memories that potentially can be introduced into this. What is a way of undoing that?
That's going to be very hard as long as the person is still in the environment that is fueling the conspiracy and the misinformation. If you can remove them from that environment and put them into some, you know, cleaner environment or better environment, you might have a chance of ultimately taking away some of the problematic and false beliefs.
Professor Blanc, do you have a quick thought on that as well?
I mean, generally, we should focus more on the conditions under which we remember things. So mostly the focus is on memory as a thing that is somewhere in your head, but it's more about sort of retrieving and reconstructing the memory in a correct way. So, you know, I'll give you an example from a slightly different context.
Quickly, for instance, I've got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, in eyewitness identification, there's lots of misidentifications. But if you simply tell people that the perpetrator may or may not be in the lineup, that already reduces it. So creating these conditions in a proper way will help avoiding these false memories.
I want to thank you both for being with us. That's Hartmut Blanc of the University of Portsmouth in Southern England. He is co-author of the study Rich False Memories of Autobiographical Events Can Be Reversed, and distinguished professor of psychological and cognitive science at UC Irvine, Elizabeth Loftus, who's been a pioneer in memory research. Thank you so much for joining us. Fresh Air is coming up next here on KPCC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 10. We have much to talk about. And a reminder, of course, our Film Week Academy Awards preview program is a virtual event this year. The 19th annual Oscar preview will be Sunday afternoon, April 18th, 1 o'clock. Make your reservation, kpcc.org/in-person.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.